The English Civil Wars, 1639 to 1660. The Battle of Preston. The Battle of Preston is going to be really, basically, the military end of the Second English Civil War. But before we get into the battle, let's go back and look at how this came about. Now, of course, Charles surrendered to the Scots on May the 5th, 1646. The Scots agreed with the English Parliament on a peace settlement, which would be put before the king. This is known as the Newcastle Propositions. It would have required all the king's subjects in Scotland, England, and Ireland to sign the Solemn League and Covenant, brought the church in each kingdom in accordance with the covenant and with Presbyterianism, and ceded much of Charles's secular authority as King of England to the English Parliament. The Scots spent months trying to persuade Charles to agree to these terms, but he refused to do so. Under pressure from the English to withdraw their forces, now the war was over. The Scots handed over Charles to the English parliamentarian forces in exchange for a financial settlement and then left England on February the 3rd, 1647. Charles then engaged in separate negotiations with different factions. Presbyterian English parliamentarians and Scots wanted him to accept a modified version of the Newcastle Propositions, but in June, Cornet George Joyce of the New Model Army seized Charles, and the Army Council pressed him to accept the Heads of Proposal, a less demanding set of terms which crucially did not require a Presbyterian reformation of the Church. He rejected these as well, and instead signed an offer known as the Engagement, which had been thrashed out with the Scottish delegation on May the 26th, 1647. Charles agreed to confirm the Solemn League and Covenant Act by Parliament in both kingdoms and accept Presbyterianism in England, but only for a trial period of 3 years, in return for the Scots' assistance in regaining his throne in England. When the delegation returned to Edinburgh with the engagement, the Scots were bitterly divided whether to ratify it in its terms. Its supporters, who became known as the Engagers, argued that it offered the best chance for the Scots to get an acceptance of the covenant across the three kingdoms, and that rejecting it risked putting Charles to accept the Heads of Proposal. It was opposed by those who believed that to send an army into England on behalf of the king would break the Solemn League and Covenant, and that it offered no guarantee of a lasting Presbyterian church in England. The Kirk went so far as to issue a declaration on May the 5th, 1648, condemning the engagement as a breach of God's law. After a protracted political struggle, the Engagers gained a majority in the Scottish Parliament, by which time the war had again broken out in England between the Royalists and the Parliamentarians. The Scots sent an army under the command of the Duke of Hamilton into England to fight on behalf of the king. On July the 8th, 1648, with the Scottish Engager army crossed the border in support of the English Royalists, the military situation was pretty well defined. For the Parliamentarians, Cromwell besieged Pembroke in the south of Wales. Fairfax besieged Colchester in Essex, and Colonel Edward Rossiter besieged Pontefract and Scarborough in the north. On July the 11th, Pembroke fell, and Colchester followed on August the 28th. Elsewhere, however, the rebellion, which had been put down by the rapidity of action rather than the sheer weight of numbers, still smoldered. Charles, the Prince of Wales, with the fleet, cruised off the Essex coast. Cromwell and John Lambert, however, understood each other perfectly. While the Scottish commanders quarreled with each other and with Sir Marmaduke Langdale, the English Royalist commander in the northwest. As the English Royalist uprisings were close to collapse, it was on the adventures of the Engager Scottish army that the interest of the war centered. It was by no means the veteran army of the Earl of Leven, which had long since been disbanded. For the most part, it consisted of raw levies, and as the Kirk party had refused to sanction the engagement, an agreement between Charles I and the Scots Parliament for the Scots to intervene in England on behalf of Charles, David Leslie and thousands of experienced officers and men declined to serve. The leadership of the Duke of Hamilton proved to be a poor substitute for that of Leslie. Hamilton's army, too, was so ill provided that as soon as England was invaded, it began to plunder the countryside for bare means of existence. On July the 7th, the Scots, with Langdale as an advance guard, were about Carlisle. and reinforcements from Ulster were expected daily. Lambert's horse were at Penrith, Hexham, and Newcastle, but were too weak to fight. Appleby Castle surrendered to the Scots on July the 31st. Lambert, who was still hanging on to the flank of the Scottish advance, fell back from Bernard Castle to Richmond, so as to close Wensleydale against any attempt of the invaders to march on Pontefract. All the restless energy of Langdale's cavalry was unable to dislodge Lambert from the passes or find out what was behind that impenetrable cavalry screen. The crisis was now at hand. Cromwell had received the surrender of Pembroke Castle on July the 11th and marched off with his men, unpaid, ragged, shoeless, at full speed through the Midlands. Rains and storms delayed his march, but he knew that Hamilton, in the broken ground of Westmoreland, was still worse off. Shoes from Northampton and stockings from Coventry met him at Nottingham, and gathering up local levies as he went, he made for Doncaster, where he arrived on August the 8th, having gained 6 days in advance of the time he had allowed himself for the march. He then called up his artillery from Hull, exchanged his local levies for the regulars who were besieging Pontefract, and set off to meet Lambert. On August the 12th, Cromwell was at Wetherby, Lambert with horse and foot at Otley, Langdale at Skipton and Gargrave, Hamilton was at Lancaster, and Sir George Munro with the Scots from Ulster and the Carlisle Royalists, organized as a separate command, owing to friction between Munro and the generals of the main army, they were at Hornby. On August the 13th, while Cromwell was marching to join Lambert at Otley, the Scottish leaders were still disputing whether they should make for Pontefract or continue through Lancashire to join Lord Byron and the Cheshire Royalists. On August the 14th, 1648, Cromwell and Lambert were at Skipton. On August the 15th, at Gisburn. On August the 16th, they marched down into the valley of the Ribble towards Preston, with full knowledge of the enemy's dispositions and full determination to attack. They had with them horse infantry, not only of the army, but of the militia of Yorkshire, Durham, Northumberland, and Lancashire. And with all these men, they were slightly outnumbered, having 8,600 men against perhaps 9,000 in Hamilton's command. But the latter were scattered for convenience of supply along the road from Lancaster through Preston towards Wigan. Langdale's corps having thus become the left flank guard instead of the advance guard. Langdale called in his advance parties, perhaps with a view of resuming the duties of the advance guard. He did that on the night of August the 13th and collected them near Longridge. It's not clear whether he reported Cromwell's advance, but if he did, Hamilton ignored the report because on August the 17th, Munro was a half a day's march to the north, Langdale east of Preston, and the main army strung out on the road to Wigan. Major General William Bailey, with a body of foot, the rear of the column, being still in Preston. Hamilton, yielding to the importunity of his Lieutenant General James Livingston, 1st Earl of Callendar, sent Bailey across the Ribble to follow the main body just as Langdale, with 3,000 foot and 500 horse only. He met the first shock of Cromwell's attack on Preston Moor. Hamilton, like Charles at Edgehill, passively shared in, without directing, the Battle of Preston. And though Langdale's men fought magnificently, they were, after 4 hours, driven across the Ribble. Bailey attempted to cross the Ribble and Derwent Bridges at Wigan Road, but Cromwell had forced his way across of both of them before nightfall. Pursuit was at once undertaken and not relaxed until Hamilton had been driven through Wigan and Winwick to Ustexter and Ashbourne. There, pressed furiously in the rear by Cromwell's cavalry and held up in front by the militia of the Midlands, the remnant of the Scottish army laid down its arms on August the 25th. Various attempts were made to raise the royal standard in Wales and elsewhere, but Preston was the death blow to the royalist hopes in the Second English Civil War. Cromwell estimated the royalist losses at about 2,000 killed and 9,000 captured. Those among the prisoners who served voluntarily were bound for servile labor in the New World, and when there were no more demand there, they were sent to the Republic of Venice. When the English Parliament decreed a day of thanksgiving for victory, it was announced that Cromwell's army had 100 men killed at most, and that's what the records still show. So the battle is just strung out everywhere. So the battle is technically where Cromwell's forces hit individual groups of the Scottish army of Hamilton's and then chased them. So unfortunately for Charles, that's the end of the main fighting, but we have a lot of negotiations and things that will take place before the true end of the English Second English Civil War, which of course, unfortunately, is the death of Charles. The sources for this: History of England by Thornton Lockyer and Smith, Cromwell, Lord Protector by Fraser, Fairfax by Wilson, Cromwell by Wedgwood, Cavaliers vs. Roundheads, English Civil War, 1642-1649 by Hibbert, English Civil War, 1640-1660 by Warden, English Civil War, 1642-1651 by Gaunt, and the English Civil War Atlas and Concise History of the Wars of the Three Kingdoms, 1639-51 by Lipscomb. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.